leaps forward are often preceded by desperate regressive steps backward. A quote by Don Beck and Chris Cohen. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the ego backlash. Actually, today I had a very different topic planned, but I woke up and I was feeling so miserable. I had a cold all week and I still have the sniffles, and I also hurt my spine this week, twisted it somehow, so it was hard for me to sit and to meditate all week, but I was kind of like suffering through the pain. And then towards the end of the week now, I'm getting this ego backlash from a lot of meditation and self-inquiry, which is kind of fucking with my mind. And so I thought, well, this would be the perfect time to talk about ego backlash since I'm going through it right now. So here we are. So let's talk about this. And this is a very practical matter, because if you're going deep down the self-actualization journey, if you're going into spirituality, you will experience many ego backlashes in your life, and so you want to be prepared for them. I want you to start to think of the human mind as a harmonic oscillator. In physics, a harmonic oscillator is like a simple spring where you pull back the spring and you let it go, and it kind of goes boom, 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 back and forth, or like a rubber band. That's called a harmonic oscillator. So that's what your mind is. See, the mind is a very complex system filled with all sorts of symbols and meanings that you create about your life. And this is really what the ego is. We're talking about the ego mind here. This is like your entire life. We're talking about the heart, the engine that drives your entire life, that holds your entire life together. This network of meanings and symbols, which is your mind. In it are contained all the behaviors and patterns and survival habits that you've accumulated from birth, basically, through all of your childhood and all of your teenage years, and all of that has been sort of hardwired and baked into this giant, complex, vast, nonlinear network, which is responsible for maintaining its own survival and existence. Because if this network didn't have a survival drive or mechanism, and it didn't behave like a harmonic oscillator, what would happen is it would just dissolve. You would die. Literally, you would die. So you picked up and built a lot of habits in your childhood, which I would call something like survival habits. These were habits that were necessary for you to survive whatever survival demands there were when you were born, and basically throughout the rest of your life. So like whatever family you were born into, maybe you had some alcoholic father or mother, or maybe you didn't get enough love in your household, or maybe you had some sort of bullying older sibling who bullied you all the time, or maybe your family didn't have a lot of money, so your parents were always fighting over how to pay the mortgage next month, and then that created a lot of stress in your life. Or maybe your mother or your father was very harsh and critical of you and didn't love you for who you were, but wanted you to be somebody else, wanted you to turn out just like them, and you weren't like that. Or maybe you were bullied at school. Or maybe you got picked on and laughed at by kids or by your siblings or something. And so whatever that is, you know, there's a million different variations on that. But whatever that is, all of that was presented to your mind and to your body and to your being as a survival challenge. It's like you had to find coping strategies to deal with that. You needed to find coping strategies to get your most basic biological needs met: food, shelter, safety. But then you also needed to develop coping strategies once you entered school and you started to socialize. You needed to develop coping strategies for how to be loved and liked and not ostracized from your community, and so that people respected you. And then as you grew up older and you got into your early 20s, now you needed to learn how to make a living and survive in the world that way. And so now there's a whole set of an additional layer of survival habits that you had to construct in order to be able to pay your bills and to be a responsible adult and all of this sorts of stuff, right? And so this is very deeply wired into what your ego is. Your ego is not just the sense of you, but it's also all of those habits. And it's all this giant, interconnected, vast network of stuff. And it's very complicated. And what happens is, like any complex system, if you studied systems theory, see my episode, Intro to Systems Thinking, for that. As you should know by now, any complex system has inertia to it. It also has a homeostatic drive to it, which means it tries to maintain its current state. Because for a system to be whatever it is, however it is, doesn't matter how it is, for it to maintain that structure over a period of time, whether it's days or months or years or a human lifetime, it has to maintain a self-similarity. Because if that system changes too much, or it allows forces from the outside, chaotic forces, to come in there and to rearrange the system, whether it's for the worse or for the better, it doesn't matter. To the system, it's always perceived as a mortal threat, because it literally is. Because, like, let's say you have a castle built out of Legos, right? The Lego blocks. And there's a certain form that this castle takes. Well, you could say that's like a complex system in this metaphor. Well, if we rearrange the Lego blocks into some other form, which is significantly different from the castle. See, if the castle was self-aware and it had, if it was a living being and it could actually be complex enough in order to have a metabolism and to be able to look at itself and perceive itself, then what it would say is that, wait a minute, too many of my blocks are being changed and rearranged into this new structure. And now this new structure is not what I was. And therefore, that literally is the death of the castle in this case. See, and that's exactly what is happening inside your mind with you in your life when you're trying to create some kind of significant change or transformation in your life. And that is what we're talking about with self-actualization and with all spiritual work, is we're looking to get a significant change in our life, which is something that's actually quite rare. Very few people undertake a conscious, deliberate effort to significantly change their life in a very fundamental way. Most people, when they try to make a change in their life, they're just doing window dressing. They're changing the very surface of their life. They're not going very deep, trying to change like fundamental existential aspects of their being. They change little things, like they change maybe how they dress, or they change one of their friends out of a dozen friends, or maybe they change a relationship. And even that can be difficult. Even that can produce ego backlash. So what is ego backlash? Ego backlash, if we're thinking of the mind as this harmonic oscillator, it's the oscillation of the string, or of the spring, rather. It's the oscillation of the spring. So what that means is that you should expect that any time you make a significant change to this complex, dynamic, nonlinear living system that you are, you should expect a counterforce that will pull you back towards homeostasis, towards the status quo of whatever you were. So if you were fat your whole life and now you're trying to get skinny, you should expect a counterforce to come in and pull you back towards being fat. Because being fat is a sort of a survival coping mechanism, believe it or not, that your mind created. And it's getting you some kind of payoff. So maybe it's because you were bullied at school so much that you've developed such low self-esteem that's why you feel like you need to eat. And you're always overeating and you're eating all these desserts and all this sort of stuff because you're not getting maybe the kind of love that you wanted to get. That's just like one example, of course. That's not the reason that all people are fat. But that's just one simplistic example. And so the ego backlash is just whenever you're trying to make progress in your life and make a significant change, the more significant of a change you're making, the more fundamental the change is. Not just window dressing stuff, but if it goes like to the existential level, then you should expect a very significant force to kind of pull you back out of it. That's ego backlash. And it doesn't feel good. And it can feel very disappointing. It can feel depressing because you feel like you've taken a giant step forward in your life, trying to change something. Maybe you're trying to change your career. You're trying to change your diet. You're trying to change and become a better meditator. Or you're trying to become a nicer person. You're trying to work on some emotional problem you have. Maybe you have some anger problem, and so you're trying to work on that so that you don't hurt the people you love in your life. But then you make progress, and then as soon as you feel like, okay, now I finally have made it, I've made the change, and now it really seems like it's stuck. And then, of course, you backslide and you take two steps back. And then you start to wonder, like, will I ever change? Is self-help even a thing? Can it even work? Or is it just all pipe dreams? Is spirituality really a thing? Or is it just wishful thinking? Can I really make significant changes in my life? And the answer, of course, is that you certainly can. But it's going to take a lot more work and suffering than you probably realized. See, most people don't appreciate what change means. Change literally means the death of you. Now, there can be various degrees of this death, from a total degree to minor degrees, which is mostly what people encounter, you know. Like, for example, when you're trying to change your diet, some part of you really is going to die if your diet is really going to change. And so that part of you will be struggling to make sure that you don't change your diet, because that part of you doesn't want to die. It's scared. And of course, it's not just going to come out and outright tell you what's going on. All of these are very kind of like subsurface, subconscious forces. And a lot of times, all you experience is you just experience like the blunt emotional impact of the ego backlash. The ego backlash usually doesn't announce itself to you like, oh, here I am after your meditation retreat. You know, you've done all this meditation work and now here I come, the ego backlash. It doesn't work that way. Usually it just feels like some sort of very primal force, emotional force, is driving you back to your old, unhealthy, dysfunctional ways. Like you might get a craving for some cheesecake, or you might get a craving for some porn or for some sex, or you might get this real like sadness in you that makes you want to go back to your ex and make up with them, even though you know that they're abusive to you. After weeks or months of meditating hardcore and doing all this self-inquiry and you know, making lots of spiritual progress, then all of a sudden you crash back down into your ego and you start to judge people and you start to criticize people and you start to demonize people, which was something that you would think you'd be over by now. And now, like, it comes back. Maybe now some anger comes back at you, kind of like that. And it just sort of like it sweeps you. It sweeps you like a giant ocean wave just kind of like carries you out into the ocean, away from shore that you've been swimming to. It's kind of like that. And that can be very frustrating. And it can take you by surprise. Because a lot of times in this work, we like to trick ourselves. The ego likes to trick itself into thinking that it's more developed and advanced than it really is, that it's further along than it really is. Especially when it starts to see a little bit of progress, it tends to overestimate its own progress. And it's like, okay, now we're going, you know, now we're moving towards something, we're moving towards enlightenment. And now you think, okay, now the worst is yet behind me. And usually when you think like that, the worst is yet ahead of you. So you want to be prepared. So the value of talking about this topic is just to set the proper expectations. And I do have an episode called Setting Proper Expectations. Go check that one out, because that one's also very important. It dovetails with what I'm talking about here. So What you need to understand is that when we're talking about creating a significant change in our life, we are talking about killing aspects of ourselves. And we are talking about reconfiguring this vast, complex, nonlinear system that is your mind, that is holding your entire life together. And that's a tricky proposition because, oftentimes when you're making a significant change, it's not just a straight up improvement. It's not always just that you take this giant tangle of complicated survival habits that you've had your whole life and then you just like slap on some positive, healthy stuff on top of it and everything gets better. A lot of times what you have to do is you have to kind of like regress first, and certain parts of your life have to like, you have to like break it apart. You know, maybe like you take your career and you look at your career and you think about how my career is so inauthentic. Like what I'm doing at work, maybe I'm even doing something that violates my greatest values. Maybe I'm violating integrity. Maybe I'm even doing something illegal with my work. And then you have to like look at that. And you have to see that, oh, for me to move to the next level, like in my spiritual growth, to be more authentic with people in my life, with my children, with my wife and all of that, I would first have to resolve this deeper inauthenticity that's there in my career. But my career, of course, is tied to my ability to support my family, right? Because if I lose my career, how am I going to support them? Maybe then my wife will leave me and my children will then hate me for getting divorced with my wife. And, you know, my whole life will fall apart. And so that's why you never really look deeply at your career. You never are able to make any significant change in your career because, of course, every part of your life is connected with every other part. And it's kind of like a house of cards that's holding itself up. And, you know, if you start to question one little corner and you start to pull on the cards over here, the whole thing is going to collapse. And so your mind is scared of that. It knows that. And then especially when we're talking about doing the deepest spiritual work, if we're talking about self-inquiry, if we're talking about hardcore meditation, if we're talking about doing solo meditation retreats, the kind that I've demonstrated on my blog, if we're talking about deep psychedelic trips where you're questioning your entire life, you know, this is like where you're questioning the very foundation of your house of cards. And this is where it does get scary because your whole life could start to fall apart depending on how dysfunctional your life is. And all of us have various kinds of dysfunctions in our lives, but of course, it comes in degrees. Some of us have a lot more of it than others do. So if your life is extremely dysfunctional, your ego is not even going to let you analyze the very foundation of your house of cards because it's way too threatening, it's way too painful, and it's going to cause way too much suffering to do that. So your ego is going to keep all your awareness only at the surface level of your house of cards. And even then, you're going to struggle. You're going to struggle even just to make changes at the surface. But, you know, for you to get significant improvement in the quality of your life, that is directly proportional to how deep you can go and how much you can work on the foundation and how much you can tolerate working on the foundation. And working on the foundation necessarily comes with suffering because suffering is what you're sort of always trying to avoid in your life. That's like what the ego's whole game is. That's what you do in your whole life, is you only do basically two things. One is you avoid suffering, and two is that you pursue pleasure. That's your whole life in a nutshell. That's your whole life from the moment you were born up to today. In every facet of your life, from your career, to your eating habits, to your exercise habits or lack thereof, to your relationships, and to your education, and everything else, right? You're avoiding suffering, and you're pursuing pleasure. And that constitutes what survival is. Survival. You're always trying to survive. And what spirituality is it's trying to transcend your survival drives and to look at reality in a more fundamental way. See reality the way that it looks when you're not preoccupied with survival. And survival is not just physical survival, it also includes your social survival. So even though you might think like, well, Leo, I'm not surviving every day. You know, I've got a pretty decent house and I've got a car and I've got my food needs met and all that. So I'm not surviving. Oh, yes, you are. You're busy struggling to survive in the social domain. Trying to be liked, trying to become famous, trying to get approval from people, trying to manage your relationships with your family and your friends and your girlfriend and your boyfriend and husband and wife and all of this and children. And you're trying to maintain that whole house of cards. Let's see. So look very closely at your life to see that that's what you're doing most of the time. 99% of the time, you're just preoccupied with survival. And so, of course, because the ego is built upon the avoidance of suffering, and the ego creates all sort of very clever structures in order to avoid suffering and to maximize pleasure. And because your whole life has been kind of built upon that and built these structures, like one is built upon another, upon another, upon another, sort of like an ancient city, you know, like an ancient old city, like modern Rome is going to be built on many layers of ancient ruins. You know, there's probably like 10 or 20 layers of ancient Rome underneath modern Rome that it was built upon. Well, that's sort of how your mind and your psyche is constructed and your ego. And so, of course, to get the most significant change, we have to go very deep to the lowest levels, to the origin. All of those existential problems that you've been avoiding your whole life, well, we have to deal with those. And of course, the whole point of avoiding them, the reason you were avoiding them in the first place, and you created all these clever defense mechanisms and survival strategies to cope with those, is because you didn't want to look at them. You didn't really want to deal with the core issues. And so, because of this, you should expect that if you do start to, you know, excavate down below, do some psychic archaeology on yourself, then what you're going to discover is that there's a lot of skeletons in your closet down there, which are, of course, responsible for why you feel so incomplete, so broken, so dissatisfied, so unfulfilled with life, and so fundamentally inauthentic, which is why you worry so much about getting approval from other people. You worry so much about them liking you in the social domain because you have spent your whole life avoiding the deep existential issues. And now anytime you try to tackle those deep existential issues, suffering will come up because you've been sweeping that stuff under the rug. And the ego backlash a lot of times comes from a sort of recognition of your own inauthenticity. Here you were thinking you were this self-developed person and you were working hard on yourself and you accomplished all this stuff in your life. But then the rude awakening comes that it's like, oh, all of that was just a facade. I was lying to the outside world and I was lying to myself. And there are these deeper truths that I didn't want to look at that now I'm looking at. And now, of course, it's like it's agitating to me. And of course, now you have these emotions that come up: fear, anger, envy, jealousy, sadness is a very common one. You might feel a kind of a sense of loss, like you're losing something in your life. And that's right. You're losing a part of your ego. And if we're talking about going, you know, to do self-inquiry towards ultimate enlightenment, then you're going to be losing yourself, not just a fragment of your ego, but the entire thing. And how do you cope with that? And that's what I've been sort of coping with this week, is I was doing some pretty deep self-inquiry. And, you know, it's dawning on me more and more that there's no self there. And that, you know, my entire personality and ego is just a house of cards. And so the more you look at that, it's one thing to just kind of know that intellectually. It's even another thing to see glimpses of it. Of course, you know, I've had many very profound non-dual experiences and various mystical states and highs. But then it's sort of another thing to actually start to like let those insights permeate your psyche and start to affect your everyday world. And now it starts to get real. You know, now you really feel it, because now, you know, what does this mean for my career? What does this mean for my business? What does this mean for my money situation? What does this mean for my relationships? Will I ever, you know, even be in a relationship again? What does it mean for my friendships? What does it mean for like my family? Do I even speak to my family anymore? Like, you know, your mind starts to accost you with all these fears and doubts and concerns, and some of those are legitimate. Your life may need to fall apart before you're able to reconstruct it into something healthy. And that's what most people don't appreciate. Most people, what they try to do is they try to always build more and more and more on top of their life. They take this sort of additive approach, but they don't realize that, you know, stuff does have to die off if we're talking about significant change. You can't just keep adding more and more to your ego. Or, I mean, you can, but that's just not going to solve your problems, because there's deep foundational problems that are not going to be fixed just through the additive approach. So in my own life, when do I get the biggest ego backlashes? Oftentimes it's after a deep breakthrough on psychedelics. And the way that manifests is that oftentimes then I want to sort of avoid any kind of spiritual work after that. I might want to avoid meditation. I might want to avoid self-inquiry. I might want to avoid psychedelics for a long time because the ego mind knows that if it keeps going in this direction, that's going to be the end of the ego mind. And the rate at which you grow, or the rate at which you deconstruct yourself, is very important, because sometimes when you try to do it too quickly, the ego backlash becomes so strong that actually it becomes counterproductive. You can kind of freak yourself out of changing or growing. And then you can kind of like shrink from the challenge, and then you can kind of just sort of avoid it for years. And so that's important to be mindful of, is that you want to be able to select a sort of a pace of growth or deconstruction, which is going to stretch you. You're still going to suffer. It's going to stretch you. It's going to be difficult, but not so much that it scares you completely off the path, which can sometimes happen. So, and it's difficult to tell you, you know, how to strike that balance. You know, where do you draw that line between doing too much meditation, too much self-inquiry, too much psychedelics, changing too many habits in your life at once? And then you end up just completely backsliding, and then maybe spending the next year playing video games and eating Hot Pockets in your mother's basement, sort of thing, right? So you got to find what that line is for you. And you want to stay just under that line so that you don't trip yourself into kind of like regressing in a way where you're just like completely disillusioned with self-development, completely disillusioned with spiritual work. And so that's why self-love is important. That's why self-reflection is important, because you got to kind of self-reflect and kind of be very honest with yourself and kind of have an honest assessment of where you're at right now in your life and how much change can you really handle. And the mind is so tricky, because sometimes the mind will use that against you, and it'll say, oh, well, I can't handle this. I can't handle another meditation retreat. I can't handle more psychedelics, when you really can. It's just that your mind will, of course, use this to get you not to change. And so it becomes this sort of psychological cat and mouse game with your own mind about, you know, how much change can you really tolerate without a complete regression. And the only way you're going to figure that out is just through trial and error, and being very mindful of the dynamics that are going in your mind. Be very mindful of how sneaky the ego is and how it plays tricks on you. And just honestly going through these backsliding episodes where, you know, you make a big change, you backslide, and then you try it again, you backslide again, you try it again, you backslide. You know, sometimes you got to do that 3 or 4 times to kind of learn where your own tipping points are. Also in my own life, besides psychedelic trips, I experienced this after solo retreats or Vipassana retreats. You know, you spend 10 days meditating nonstop, and then you come back from that. And usually what happens is that very quickly the ego gets sucked back into watching television for me, playing video games, which usually I don't do, but then oftentimes after a retreat, I'll want to play some video games, eating some unhealthy food sometimes. You get that too much anymore. But that happens after retreats. Lots of self-inquiry, I also get some of these tendencies. And very interestingly, sometimes I listen to binaural beats, which are these like meditation, different sound frequencies that play in each ear. And if you listen to a lot of binaural beats, what can happen is that they can cause emotional upheaval. Stuff can come up in your psyche, stuff from your past, old memories, all sorts of garbage can kind of just come up to the surface of your consciousness. And then you have to process that. And from that can come ego backlash. But I mean, by no means is this an exhaustive list. I mean, people will experience ego backlash from so many different things. From enlightenment experiences, from various glimpses of non-duality. If you're just trying to install new habits, like maybe you're trying to change your work habits, like to develop a strong work ethic. Maybe you're trying to wake up early in the morning. That can cause an ego backlash if you spent your whole life not doing that. If you're trying to change your diet, that's a very common one. If you're doing a no-fap challenge, very common to get ego backlashes there. So what do you do to minimize ego backlash and how do you deal with it? Well, firstly, you just expect it. You want to understand your mind as this harmonic oscillator. And you want to appreciate the homeostatic forces which are keeping you alive. So it's not that your mind is evil or bad in kind of pulling you back. Your mind is just very safety and survival oriented. And it has to be to keep you alive. And you know, sometimes you can really appreciate the power of homeostasis and the value of it. Like, when, for example, when you have a terrible psychedelic trip, a really bad one, like a really gnarly one that scares the shit out of you. But then you're thankful the next day because your mind brings you back to normal. Within a week, you're back to normal. You forget about the trip. It's out of your mind and you're just back to normal. And you're thankful for that because you don't want to be stuck in that horrible state of madness that you were in when you're on one of these very deep psychedelic bad trips. So you can appreciate that. See, there, homeostasis is working in your favor. It's making sure you don't go crazy. Because if it was that easy to shift your mind, you could easily like take a psychedelic, shift your mind into total madness, and then stay that way for the rest of your life. Now, that would be a problem, wouldn't it? So the homeostasis is there to protect you. Now, of course, just like an overprotective mother or father, the effect on the child can be very damaging, even though the intention is good. And that is sort of what happens, is that all these survival mechanisms that we built when we were a child and early adults, they turn out to be not as necessary as we thought they were, especially after, you know, we've kind of outgrown those various risks and dangers that we faced. Now we don't face them anymore, but those habits that we created in order to solve those issues are still there, and they're still running our lives. So very importantly, just expect that ego backlash will happen. Any significant change generally comes with suffering. It's going to come with fear. It's going to come with various emotions that come up. So when this stuff does happen, if you're making a big change in your life, start to label it. Explicitly call it out as an ego backlash. So when it's happening to you, you can just say to yourself, oh yeah, that's the ego backlash that Leo was talking about. Oh yeah, there it is. That helps you to get some distance from it so you're not totally sucked in and absorbed to it. The next step is to observe it as mindfully as possible. And this is where it helps for you to have a meditation habit and to do these various kinds of retreats that I'm talking about, or to do psychedelics, all of these develop more mindfulness within you. So if you have some mindfulness skills that you've hopefully built up already, then you want to apply those in your moment of sadness, depression, fear, and general contraction. So generally what happens is the ego contracts. So as the ego contracts, the more mindfulness you have, the more easily you can observe the contraction without getting sucked into the contraction and acting from the contraction. And very importantly, at this point, if you're mindful enough, you want to remind yourself not to make any kind of drastic major life decisions in this state of contraction. Because you could easily make some kind of foolish, rash decision like, I'm leaving my family, or I'm divorcing my spouse, or I'm quitting my job, or you could even get to the point where you say, I'm killing myself. Be very careful about that, because this can be dangerous. You want to make sure that you don't make any kind of major life decisions when you're feeling negative, when you're feeling crippled by fear, anger, sadness, or anything like this. When you're feeling very disempowered, when you're feeling like a victim, and all of this will happen to you, right? That's what makes the ego backlash so difficult, is that it's got so much emotional charge to it that it just kind of like sucks you and sweeps you away, and you're not able to like think clearly. All of your lofty, high ideals, all of the reasons that you were pursuing enlightenment and spirituality, and the reason you were pursuing self-actualization, the good person you were trying to become, all the love and the beauty of life, all of that gets stripped away from you in this moment of ego backlash. You don't have it. You're feeling very negative. At that moment, it's going to feel to you like there's no hope. Your life is going to be terrible, and that spirituality will never work for you, and you'll never get enlightened, and you'll never be able to change your diet, and you'll never be able to find a good job, and you'll never be able to get a good girlfriend or a good boyfriend. You know, you're going to feel very negative. And you want to make sure to remind yourself not to make any major life decisions at that point. Just mindfully observe the suffering. I have an episode called How to Deal with Strong Negative Emotions. That's a very important episode for when you're in this, the sort of the depth of the ego backlash, so that you can just kind of suffer it mindfully and let that suffering actually purify you and grow you. And so there's sort of a silver lining to these ego backlashes. In a sense, it's terrible because you're like at the worst that you would feel in your life during these moments. And it also feels like you're not making any progress. But at the same time, if you're able to suffer it mindfully, that suffering will purify you. And in that, you will actually make your greatest progress. So this is another one of those very counterintuitive things, these things that kind of go full circle. It's precisely when you're backsliding that you have the opportunity to learn the most about yourself and to grow the most. But it's also precisely because of that, that it's the most difficult for you to remain mindful during that moment and to maintain all of your good habits. And that's another way to deal with ego backlash, is as much as you can, try to maintain your positive habits, even if you don't feel like it. So if you're in the midst of an ego backlash, you probably won't want to meditate that day. You'll want to skip it. You probably won't want to observe your diet that day. You'll want to go splurge on some cheesecake. And you probably won't want to be nice to your children or to your friends or to your family members. Push yourself just to be nice anyways. Like today, I really didn't want to shoot this video. Like I was really debating about whether I should shoot or not. I felt like procrastinating it. And I just kind of went through the motions. And then, you know, by the time that I turned on the camera, it's really not much different than any other day. The next thing to remember when dealing with an ego backlash is to not get discouraged by it. Frame it in a positive way. Frame it as though this is growth. This is part of the growth process. What's really important is to stop thinking of growth as a straight, constantly upwards moving line on a graph. That's not what your spiritual growth or your self-actualization growth will look like. it will look with like, you know, jagged sawtooth kind of pattern with lots of ups and downs and sometimes big spikes downward. And usually it's when you get to your biggest spike downward that then you get your biggest spike upward as well. So the way that I try to reframe it in my mind whenever I'm having this emotional upheaval or I'm feeling like I'm regressing is just that this is the path. This is the growth. I'm growing right now as I'm doing this, as I'm suffering through this. This is the growth. That's a really important reframe. And also how you deal with it is that you stop expecting quick fixes and easy one-time solutions. Almost never in your life will there be just one thing that will just come in there and resolve all your stuff for you. It just doesn't work that way. So make sure you get your expectations right. Get them right now, because right now you're probably not in an ego backlash state. So that when you do get into an ego backlash state, in a month or in a year or in 5 years, you'll remember this. You'll remember these points and you'll be able to console yourself while you're in the midst of it. It's also very powerful to apply self-love in these ego backlash states. And what that means is that you don't fall into the temptation of guilting yourself and judging yourself and condemning yourself. That's very common. That's our natural inclination, is to say, oh, but I thought I was better. I thought I was stronger. This shouldn't be happening to me. Why am I so weak? Why am I so pathetic? Why can't I get my shit together? Why do I just keep splurging on this food? Why do I have to go and jerk off to this porn? Why do I have to watch this television? Right? You start to guilt yourself for that. And that just doubles your misery. And when you're doing that, that's precisely when you're not learning. You're not suffering mindfully there. So rather than that, try to love yourself more during this moment. Try to be easy on yourself. So we've talked about various examples. Of course, we're just touching the tip of the iceberg of all the different examples that exist, that are possible for ego backlashes to occur, that will cause them. So the other thing you should be aware of, though, is that there's something called the collective ego backlash as well. Individually, we have egos. Collectively, complex systems also behave as though they have egos and survival drives. For example, I have an episode called Collective Ego, which talks about a lot of these collective dynamics that many people aren't aware of. So the ego backlash will also occur there. It can occur within corporations, within governments, within political parties. And if you're a student of history, then you've seen this. You've seen this play out in ancient history, but also in modern history. So for example, Reconstruction after the Civil War in the American South, what was that but a collective ego backlash against the abolition of slavery? So things like the Jim Crow laws, that's ego backlash at the collective level. And then if you're a student of German history and the World Wars, then you know that World War II was really sort of an ego backlash of the German people against the way they were treated in the end of World War I, with the sort of a very harsh treaty that was imposed upon them after losing World War I. The weight of that punishment really just sort of created a festering wound, which ultimately allowed Hitler to come to power and create World War II. So we can think of that as a collective ego backlash. You can also think of the crackdown on psychedelics that happened in the late 60s and early 70s after the hippie revolution in America. What was that but a collective ego backlash? Psychedelics were outlawed. All these laws were passed by the Nixon administration and others. The war on drugs was declared, and it's really still going on today. And these beautiful substances were demonized, and all scientific research on them was basically banned. for decades, and we're still, to a certain extent, going through that. Although now psychedelics are going through sort of a second renaissance. Gamergate. What is that but a collective ego backlash against various stage green spiral dynamics forces that are coming to the fore and reshaping society, like feminism and multiculturalism and all of this. So Gamergate was a reaction against that. A lot of times you notice that if you're familiar with the spiral dynamic stages, that one stage will react strongly against another stage above it, trying to dominate it or trying to demonize it. So, for example, if feminists from stage green try to demonize stage orange masculinity too much, stage orange masculinity will come back and try to defend itself through an ego backlash. And what about the Tea Party and the alt-right movement that was born over the last 10 years here in America, really after the election of Obama? That was a very interesting collective ego backlash. Sort of a stage blue-orange ego backlash against green. And that's still going on today. And really, the election of Trump was really just a collective ego backlash against Obama. You could think of it that way. That's one way to analyze it. That's not the only factor, but it is a factor, a very interesting factor. It's very interesting, for example, that Trump's rise to popularity within politics really started with the whole birtherism thing, which was really a direct attack on Obama. Very interesting how that worked. So you see, complex systems, which of course include governments, corporations, political parties, social movements of various kinds, they behave just like all complex systems do, like these sort of harmonic oscillators. And so for a corporation to be able to sustain itself, or for a political party to sustain itself as it is, it has to resist death. And the way that it does that is by defending itself at all costs, even when it's dysfunctional, even when it's pathological, even when it hurts itself, it still does it. And in fact, you know, the Republican Party in America right now is self-destructing. The last 2 years we've been witnessing the self-destruction of the Republican Party. But the people in the party, many of them, some of them see it, but many of them don't see it because they are part of the system. And so, of course, the system doesn't see that it's sabotaging itself. And that's exactly what's happening with you individually in your life. You have the intention to clean up your diet and to eat healthy, but then you sabotage yourself along the way, and you're not conscious enough to really see how you're damaging yourself because you have kind of different parts in your mind that are kind of fragmented and fighting against each other. You have like the higher self, the lower self, and stuff in between, and all this needs to get reconciled. And it's this reconciliation process, which really is like a war. A war is raging in your mind in the same way that, you know, you need to have a war in Europe in order to ultimately pacify Europe. To unify Europe required many, many wars. Europe is quite unified right now, but that's only because there have been like hundreds of wars in European history over the last couple thousand years that have ultimately led to this unification. And even now, you know, it's not totally unified. There's parts of the European Union which are breaking off all the time. And there's rise of nationalist movements against the European Union right now. So it's very interesting to observe these dynamics happening out in the world socially with corporations and governments and political parties, but then to also notice the same stuff is happening inside of you, the same kind of dynamic. And then you see this kind of parallel between the collective level and the individual level, and it's very fascinating. But of course, all of this will just be theory when you're in the heat of the moment yourself, when you're actually suffering through it. All of this theory is going to fly out the window. None of it's going to really matter to you. So when you're really in it, that's where you want to build the mindfulness skills to be able to suffer through it mindfully, and just try to do the best you can. Try to love yourself. Try to be gentle on yourself. And then always remember that just because you failed to make a change doesn't really mean anything, because you can come back next week, next month, next year, and attempt to make the change again. Only this time, really, you'll be smarter, because every time you fail, every time you backslide, if you're mindful, if you backslide mindfully, then you will notice the various little sneaky maneuvers that your ego uses against you to keep yourself in homeostasis. You'll start to notice various like mental tricks and self-deception tactics, all those self-deception mechanisms that I talked about in my three-part series about self-deception. You'll start to notice more and more of those. You'll start to notice all the smoke screens that your mind throws up, all the ways that it projects out onto the outside world, how it resists taking responsibility. And as you watch all of that, you start to notice just how sneaky this beast called ego is. It's pure sneakiness. It's pure devilry, pure trickery. That's all it is. And this is how the devil does his work, is through trickery, through sleight of hand. See my episode about what is the devil. See, so we're bringing in a lot of stuff together here. And now you start to really understand why life is so challenging. It's because of all the trickery that's involved, all the tricks that you play on yourself. And why life is a maze. See my episode about life is a maze. It's a maze because you're lost in the maze of your own mind. You're not sure how to distinguish your genuine motivations from the trickery that the devil in you throws up, which is the ego. And so you're trying to sort all this out. And that's why you have 80 years to live, is so you can sort through all this stuff. You need a lot of attempts. So don't get discouraged by this. Also, it's important to distinguish between states and stages of development. A state is like a peak experience that you have. And a lot of times what people do, especially when we're naive and we just get into self-development, is that we have a peak state, whether it's on a psychedelic or just on a meditation retreat or just in our life. You know, we're feeling great. We're on top of the world. And then we just assume that, well, that state, it'll just lock in. And that's how my life will be from now on. And it's never that way. It's much easier to attain a high state than it is to attain a high stage of development. This is a distinction that I got from Ken Wilber, the distinction between states and stages. A stage of development takes years of work to build. You have to work on it consistently. So even though as a newbie meditator, you could have a peak meditative state that goes very high and might even reach the depths of a Zen master, but you're not going to be at the Zen master's stage of development when it comes to meditation. Because for that, you would need to meditate for years and decades to be able to reach a sort of a baseline level of solid meditation abilities, right? Like any newbie can just get a little bit lucky here and there, can have a lucky break and things go right in their life. But it really takes a dedication to this path to be able to build sort of a solid stage of meditation ability or business skill or relationship skills or anything like that. So make that distinction and don't just get tricked and seduced by the high states. Because usually after a high state, what happens? Of course, you drop back down. If you noticed, after your greatest emotional highs in life, you usually end up feeling pretty low. And vice versa, after your lowest emotional lows in life, actually the next day, the next week, you can end up feeling pretty good. So that's also one way that I console myself when I'm in a bad mood or I'm feeling negative or something like that, is that I just remind myself that usually after my worst states of feeling, I will experience some of my best ones. And I will rise to a sort of a new level, a new stage will be reached if I can just suffer through this mindfully. And of course, I never am able to suffer through a situation fully mindfully. So don't be a perfectionist about it here. Because again, if you're perfectionistic about being mindful all the time of all your suffering, then of course you're always going to fall short of that. And that's just going to make you more miserable and more depressed. So keep all these points in mind. If you ever do experience an ego backlash in the future, a very strong one, remind yourself that this episode is here. You can always go to YouTube, type in ego backlash. This episode will pop up. Listen to it again. And hopefully that helps you to ground yourself, center yourself, and suffer through the moment mindfully. But even better would be if you just kind of like remember this lesson deep in your mind, such that no matter where you are, even if you don't have internet access, even if you don't have YouTube, even if this video gets taken down or whatever, you will remember for the rest of your life how to cope through these challenging moments. All right, that's it. I'm done here. Please click the like button for me and come check out actualize.org. That's my website. There you will find the book list, my life purpose course, my blog, and the forum where you can also get emotional support for this journey. The last thing I'll say is that it's amazing. You know, you can watch a lot of these videos from me or from other people. You can read a lot of books about how to do personal development and spirituality. But when you actually start doing it, the work will feel very different than how you thought it would go or how you thought it would feel just from watching all the videos and gathering up all the concepts. None of the videos and none of the concepts can really get you a sense of what this work entails, just how deep it goes, just how broad it is, just how multifaceted it is, and also how much more difficult and complex it is than even my relatively complex videos and theories pointed out to be. That's why you need to start doing the actual work. And you might discover that the best way to do the work at some point is not even to watch me anymore, not even to listen to my videos, because all that just becomes more theory. Sometimes you need to just go deeply into the work and let the work kind of guide you itself. In the end, all of the answers are inside of you. You don't really need me. You don't need elaborate theories and books and all of this. This is mostly just kind of like for entertainment. I enjoy philosophy. I enjoy talking about these ideas. I enjoy breaking stuff down and analyzing things and making it complex. Like, I just enjoy that. I don't know what else I would really do in life if I wasn't doing that. It's just kind of interesting to me. But also, it's not necessarily that beneficial. You don't need all this detailed stuff. You don't need to take copious notes on all of these complicated theories and concepts. Really, that can be a distraction, so be careful. Ground yourself in the work. That's absolutely important. Ground yourself in the work and let your work reveal to you what is true. As you actually do the work, you will discover that various things that I've said, various ways that I've conceptualized stuff, various models that I've shared with you aren't quite right. That's right. Because the work itself is its own thing. And it's very messy. It's very individualized. It's very different for different people. So even though some of these models and concepts might be true for me and work for me, they might not work for you. Because you've got your own different problems and coping strategies that you've invented while you were growing up that need to be dealt with. And the only way you're going to discover those is really going inside yourself. So, if you like the theory and all that, all this analysis, that's great. Just don't get lost in it. Don't turn it into an ideology. Don't turn it into an addiction. That's very easy. Very easy. I mean, hell, I'm addicted to talking about this stuff for sure. I'm addicted to reading various kinds of self-help books. I mean, I probably at this point don't even need to read another self-help book in my entire life. I have enough theory that I could spend 40 years trying to actualize it all. And that will be what I'm doing more and more in the future, is I'm going to be relying less on theory and more on just like going really deeply into the work. And that can be scary because a lot of people, what they do is they use the theory and the philosophy and all this, all the concepts and models to actually not do the work. Because, of course, the ego is very sneaky. And the ego will use any trick up its sleeve to maintain homeostasis. And so if it can just lose itself in a bunch of fancy theory and cool philosophy, then that's what it'll do. It'll do that for 10 years and not accomplish anything. So watch out for that trap. But if you still want more of it, then more theory will be coming in the future.